I'm about to speak to two New Testament scholars. We'll focus on ISIS and what we can do.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are going to have a fascinating interview, a new book out, Jesus and the Jihadis, Confronting the Rage of ISIS. This is Michael Brown. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And Zionist payroll, what is the Zionist payroll? Who is behind the Zionist payroll? When I get these hateful comments coming my way from folks that don't like my stand for Israel and the things we preach and teach, I get accused of being on the Zionist payroll. If someone could tell me what that payroll is, where it's coming from, who's got the money, and where it's going, that would be very helpful for me to know. And let me tell you this plainly. Jew hatred is under the surface around the world, always ready to surface. Yes, it's around the world, out, open, overt, undeniable, explicit, vicious, ugly, violent, but it's also always lurking under the surface. I'm still stunned by it. I was talking at a panel discussion in Jerusalem earlier this year, and I mentioned that on a certain level, anti-Semitism is the default mentality of humanity, that unless God does something exceptional in people's hearts, they're going to go the way of anti-Semitism. That's just the default value. And what shocks me, what stuns me, is not seeing it come from the radical Muslim world where Israel has been so demonized, but seeing it come from professing Christians. When a subject will come up about promises to Israel, it's one thing to have a theological difference and to say, I have a hard time seeing modern Israel today as fulfillment of prophecy for these various interpretive reasons. There is no venom in it. There's no anger in it. There's no hostility in it. Fine, we can have a discussion about that. To me, it's very clear, but I understand why some differ on a prophetic level. That's perfectly fine. Some may have a certain theological scheme, and they can't see where Israel fits in, and there's no anger, there's no hostility, there's no venom. That's fine. We can talk. We can have a friendly conversation about these things and explore the word, but I'm talking about venomous positions. I'm talking about positions, how dare you even think that God has anything left for the Jews, and they're guilty of this, and they're guilty of that, and modern Israel is this, and modern Israel is that, in the harshest, ugliest, most exaggerated, untrue terms from the lips of professing Christians. I've seen it on posts to the debate I had a couple years ago on Moody Radio with Reverend Stephen Sizer. I've seen it in comments that were posted to other debates I've had with others on eschatology who see end times differently than I do. And I'm talking, let me say it again, ugly, venomous, hate-filled, despicable stuff. And you think, wow, you wouldn't have known it was there unless the relevant subject of Israel came up. You wouldn't have known it was there unless you happened to touch on it. Friends, there remains a spiritual battle surrounding the lost sheep of the house of Israel. There remains a spiritual battle over the city of Jerusalem. These things are not going away. These things are not lessening. In fact, in many ways, we can expect them to increase as we get closer to the return of the Lord, whenever that will be. That means we need to be spiritually vigilant. That means we need to know what the word says. That means we need to hold our ground. That means that we need to pray as the scriptures direct us for Jerusalem, that God would make it the praise of all the earth. And the only ultimate solution to the great conflict and pain in the Middle East is focused not on the peace plan, but in a person, Jesus, Yeshua, the Messiah. When we come back, I'll be speaking with New Testament scholars Jeremiah Johnson and Craig Evans. Their new book, Jesus and the Jihadis, Confronting the Rage of ISIS.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm holding in my hands a fascinating new book, Jesus and the Jihadis, Confronting the Rage of ISIS, the Theology Driving the Ideology. A number of books have been written on ISIS. A number of books have been written on radical Islam, many really over the years. And yet this is unique in many ways. It's a totally readable, digestible book laid out clearly. What makes it especially unique to me is the theological approach and the fact that you have two New Testament scholars involved in writing this book. Dr. Craig Evans, a colleague, I've had the joy of being at conferences together with Professor Evans. He's a highly respected New Testament Aramaic scholar. You may have seen him appearing on History Channel or Discovery Channel or National Geographic Channel or BBC, NBC, Dateline, things like that. Dr. Jeremiah Johnson, also New Testament scholar and apologist, studied in Oxford in England. He's the founder and president of Christian Thinkers Society, which is a resident institute at Houston Baptist University, where he's also a professor. Gentlemen, welcome to The Line of Fire. Great to have you today.
Hey, good. Good to be with you.
All right. I may have just accidentally knocked Jeremiah off the line there. Oh, sorry about that. We'll get him back momentarily. My bad there. Craig, let me ask you a question before we dive into the content of the book. Knowing your background, knowing your careful New Testament scholarship, Aramaic scholarship, what is it that got you to team with Professor Johnson and write a book like this?
Well, there's a long history to it. I'm very interested in the historical Jesus and all sources that touch upon him. And I know you know a lot about rabbinic work and so on, and I've tried to immerse myself since my days as a graduate student, not just in the Targums, the Aramaic paraphrase of Tanakh, but also in early rabbinic traditions and so on. And I was always fascinated by what the rabbis said about Jesus. And what alerted me to the significance of this, and I would, you know, I'd say, oh, Jesus occurs in the Quran in a few places and so on, but I didn't realize the intersection till only a few years ago that Muhammad, and to the extent this really is Muhammad that's giving us this material, in Surah 4 of the Quran particularly, but elsewhere as also, he was really reacting to what rabbis and other Jewish leaders were saying about Jesus in eastern Syria, western Arabia, in the late 6th, early 7th century, and he found it offensive. And that is what is so interesting, is that his reaction that you see reflected in the Quran is he's participating in this debate where Christians are saying Jesus is God's son, and rabbis are saying, no, he's not. He's the offspring of adultery or something like that, and Muhammad found it very offensive, so he's rebuking Jews on the one hand and correcting Christians on the other who turn Jesus into a divine being, which he thinks is wrong, no, he's only a prophet. I found that fascinating, and so I've immersed myself in early Islamic thought and the Quran in recent years, and that's how I got into it.
Very, very interesting. Dr. Johnson, my apologies. We get you on the air, and I cut you off before you can say a word. I was just asking Professor Evans what it is that got him onto this topic, because we've intersected on Christian-Jewish issues and New Testament scholarship and Jewish background. So it was fascinating to see his interest in Islam. How did you get focused on this topic?
Well, Dr. Brown, that's a great question. And first, let me just tell you that I'm honored to be on your show. I'm a huge fan of The Line of Fire, and I'm a huge fan of you, Dr. Brown. You have such a unique gifting and such a unique show, and it's just a pleasure to be on with you. So thanks for the opportunity.
Well, thank you.
I think what is so unique is the book really grew organically, and that's how great books come together, I think. You know, I get asked questions in city after city. Craig and I together have lectured throughout North America, the UK, and Israel, the Middle East. We've traveled extensively through the Holy Lands, not just Israel, but all the other lands. And Christians don't know what to make of ISIS. And if you poll most Christians today, Most Christians do not know how to engage in a thinking dialogue with a Muslim. Many of them have never talked to a Muslim. And then you bring in ISIS, and it can get so intimidating. I mean, there's a realization that nobody really understands ISIS. Very few understand the Quran, that the Islamic State is a reflection of the Quran. People ask me all the time, is ISIS Islamic? Absolutely. It is Quranic-centric. And so it's really just a reaction to questions that we've been asked. Christians are afraid of what they don't understand, and this book is a book that every single Christian needs to have on their bookshelf, because it's everything Christians need to know and don't, not only about ISIS, but about the Islamic State and the land of Israel. So I think it's a unique perspective and certainly distinguishes our book from all the other ISIS books out there on the market.
Yeah, all the other ISIS books and all the other radical Islam books, in my view as well. I was absolutely fascinated when I heard the title and heard who was writing it. So Dr. Evans, what do you believe is a biblical key to understanding and ultimately stopping the terrorist regime of ISIS?
Well, I think our Western leaders have to understand the theological foundation on which ISIS builds itself, and I think that is just completely missed. I think a lot of our leaders imagine it's just one more terrorist group. It just happens to be a bit more effective than the others, and they don't realize how strongly driven it is and how its own intellect is so fed by theology, and that's what's behind their ideology and their practices. And so if you don't understand what Islam is, and as Jeremiah just said, most don't, it's a claim for the land. It's a dispute over who the real heir of Abraham is. And, of course, I know, Michael, you know that. But most don't. And that's why in our book, in our opening chapter, we say it all starts with a man who lived 4,000 years ago. And so it's a biblical story throughout. And that should wake up interest on the part of Christians to realize, hey, this is really, it's a quest to claim the heritage of Abraham. That's what this fight is all about. And if you don't understand that, if the theology is just marginalized or ignored, if you think all it is tactics, all it is terrorism, you're not even going to begin to figure out how in a theological and intellectual way to counter this movement. You won't be able to figure out how it is they're able to recruit young people. You won't be able to counter them. And that's why you got to start there, and that's what our book is all about.
Yeah, and it is amazing how much of our foreign policy ignores these things, doesn't address these things, how much of popular news commentary just ignores them and looks at it on a purely humanitarian level without understanding the theological and historical roots. Well, Dr. Johnson, when we talk to Christians about Islam and end-time ideology, some have heard about the 12th Imam or things like that, but is Jesus involved in Islamic eschatology? And if so, why does it matter?
That is such a great question, Dr. Brown. Jesus, according to Islamic eschatology, and let me make this clear, there's not just the Quran. The Quran only makes up about 14% of Islamic doctrine. You have the Hadith, and then you have the Sirah. So altogether, it's the Sunnah. And you cannot read the Quran without understanding the Hadith. And we're talking about the most ancient Hadith, the ones that are generally accepted by all. And when you read those, you come to find out that Muslims believe that Jesus Christ is the ultimate Muslim, and he will come back at his own second coming, and he will institute worldwide Sharia law. That means that Jesus himself will end Christianity either by killing all the Christians or by making sure all Christians convert, of course, killing all the Jews, breaking the crosses, it says specifically, and then he will Hajj to Mecca. He will marry, he will have children, and then he will die. And that's what Islam says about Jesus. And as Craig and I point out in our book, that says a lot of other things, of course, that it cribs not only from the Old and New Testament, but from apocryphal writings as well. Jesus wasn't really crucified on the cross. He was just made to be crucified, look like someone else was crucified. There is no such thing as a Trinity. And then it's really interesting, Dr. Brown, when we study the differences. I get so frustrated, like I know you do, when people say all gods are the same, Allah and Yahweh, there's no difference. Well, that's not true. Again, what does the Quran say about Allah? Allah doesn't love everybody. Allah only loves the Muslim. And so Jesus factors into that as the ultimate Muslim.
Yeah, and most Christians don't realize that the Muslims think of Abraham and Moses or Noah and Jesus as Muslims, and that we have somehow twisted everything and changed everything. And, of course, one of the titles that does not apply to Allah, of his 99 titles and other writings about him, one of the titles is not Father. So the difference between the Allah of the Quran and Islamic theology and the God of the Bible, very stark. We come back. I've got a bunch more questions from my guests, Professors Craig Evans and Jeremiah Johnson. The book, Jesus and the Jihadis, Confronting the Rage of ISIS. We come back. I'll tell you how you can get it very, very conveniently.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is Michael Brown. I'm joined by New Testament scholars Craig Evans and Jeremiah Johnston, co-authors of the brand new book. It's a really clear read. It's a reliable read because you've got top scholars here, but it's laid out in a way that is totally digestible, and every chapter giving further insights, Jesus and the Jihadis Confronting the Rage of ISIS. On topic, but slightly off topic, Dr. Johnson, what do you think about Ben Carson's comments that a true Muslim who believes in Sharia law could not be the president of the United States?
Well, I think I agree with Dr. Carson, because according to Sharia law, no one has any civil rights. I mean, when you study Sharia law, people that have actually read the Sharia, you see that basic civil rights are denied for non-Muslims. In America, by our DNA, everyone is entitled to certain unalienable rights given to us by our Creator. And so according to Sharia law, though, that's not the case. I mean, if you are not a Muslim in Sharia law, you're not known as an unbeliever. I prefer to use the Arabic term kefir. And what does the Quran say about the kefir? The kefir can be mocked, beheaded, plotted against, terrorized. A Muslim is no friend of a kefir, a non-believer. A kefir can be cursed. These are quotes, citations directly from surahs. And Dr. Brown, I think the one that just is the most telling, the most revealing, that betrays Islam is Surah 24:2, where it says that you are not to show compassion. And I think that's the end of civilization as we know it, to not show compassion to non-Muslims. And I don't have an axe to grind. I'm just quoting from the Quran, and I think it's important that people know that.
Mm. Friends, if you'd like to order the book, we made it really simple for you. Just give us a call, 1-800-278-9978. You can get the book for $20. We'll pay the postage, 1-800-278-9978. Dr. Evans, the Quran claims that the biblical texts are corrupted, and the Quran has the real version of biblical history and tells us the truth about Jesus. So a two-part question. First, what are the most fundamental ways that the Quran twists Scripture? We heard a few already about Jesus didn't die on the cross and things like that. But what are some of those fundamental ways it twists Scripture? And how do we know that the claims of the Quran are not true?
Well, lots of ways. One of them is simply the biblical history that you have in the Old Testament or Tanakh, the history that you have about Jesus and the Gospels, the early church and the Book of Acts. They enjoy archaeological corroboration. They enjoy also corroboration from other ancient historical sources. And when the Quran then rewrites Old Testament history and tells us new things about Abraham and the relationship he has to his sons, his descendants, you know, the whole question of Ishmael and everything else. When you get a rewriting of Moses, you get a rewriting of Miriam, actually, Moses' sister. You get confusion between the various Marys, by the way. Mm. You read all this in the Quran, you wonder, where is Muhammad getting this? It's not on the basis of ancient sources. It's not on the basis of historical fact. He claims simply, of course, it's Gabriel giving him the word of Allah. And so revelation then trumps everything. And so it becomes an unfalsifiable type of a theory. Well, anybody, any founder of a cult can claim to have divine insight, and he requires no evidence whatsoever. Well, rational thinking people want to know, is there really evidence? Is there any proof? Are there any facts that support it? And that's why I trust the Gospels. They're backed up by evidence, reality, verisimilitude. You don't have that in the Quran. You have this man's opinion. He tells us it's from God. How do you know? And if you put it to a test and you find out that there are numerous confusions in history, numerous errors, numerous false statements and contradictions, why in the world should you trust the Quran?
And Craig, I would add, I mean, has anyone read the Quran lately? When you compare the Quran with the Bible, of course, is in a league of its own. Of course, the surahs are not organized chronologically or by subject matter. There's roughly 114 surahs. Of course, it's smaller than the New Testament. But when you compare that with the Bible, there's no comparison because it's not arranged, as I said, chronologically or by subject matter. And I think it's just a garbled, very difficult read unless you have some understanding like you do, Dr. Brown, in Semitic languages and of that area. And so just comparing the text side by side, I think, is revealing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dr. Evans, you had an extensive chapter in a book responding to a Bart Ehrman book, When Jesus Became God and the Response When God Became Jesus. And you just go through archaeological evidence corroborating things in the New Testament. So when you're speaking about these things, just obviously we could do a whole show or many hours on this, but just give a highlight of archaeological evidence confirming the accounts in the Gospels. We've got about 2 minutes, so just an overview.
Well, you have numerous places, persons, and events that are talked about in the Gospels for which we actually have corroboration in archaeology. Real places, real events, real people. And that's called verisimilitude. That's what historians look for. That's what you don't find in 2nd, 3rd, 4th century apocryphal works. That's what you don't find in the Quran either. And so if you're going to be a rational person who says, look, I really do want evidence. I know there's a place for faith, of course, but I want some kind of supporting evidence. Ancient manuscripts, something. I don't want a Book of Mormon, for example, that we've got to believe that somebody's telling the truth about gold tablets that nobody has since seen. We want real manuscripts, and that's what we have. And so there's a Cana of Galilee, and there is a Nazareth. We actually have an inscription that mentions Nazareth. There is a real Jerusalem. There are these customs and practices that are described in the Gospels. There were synagogues. These things are supported by archaeological work. And so let me put it to you this way. I know firsthand, personally, Jewish archaeologists. They're not Christians. They're not necessarily theists, believers in God. They regularly trust, read, and follow Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and the Book of Acts. Why? Because they find them reliable guides that will assist them in doing their archaeological work.
Mm.
I find that extremely compelling. That suggests, you know what, the Gospels are reliable, you can trust them, because there are people who are professional archaeologists who trust them, even though they're not necessarily believers.
Yeah, and that is an extraordinary testimony in terms of Jewish or Israeli archaeologists. Friends, the book, Jesus and the Jihadis, the authors Dr. Craig Evans and Dr. Jeremiah Johnston. Listen, I have the pleasure of speaking with these gentlemen for almost a half hour more. Many of you won't be able to listen to all of the show, so here's what we're doing to make this the best possible educational resource we can. When you order the book, we'll also give you the CD of the entire one-hour interview. So the book, Jesus and the Jihadis, the CD of the interview with Professors Jeremiah Johnston and Craig Evans. Give us a call now to order, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I'm so pleased to have with me two respected New Testament scholars and apologists, Dr. Craig Evans, Dr. Jeremiah Johnston. Their new book, Jesus and the Jihadis, Confronting the Rage of ISIS. It's not easy to have a lot of scholarly information and boil it down in a way that everyone can understand, that's readable, and that is spiritual truth as well. But that's what these gentlemen have managed to do, and I commend them for it. Dr. Johnston, let's say that we focus on the ideology of ISIS. How does it help us to understand the theology of ISIS? And then, as Christians, what do we do with that?
Well, there are theological overtones in their ideology because when you look, for instance, at the messaging that they're putting out, I think there's a tendency for Westerners to not understand how sophisticated the leaders are of the Islamic State. They have a media center. They have a propaganda center. We don't need to sit here and guess what they're thinking or what their message is and their ideology, but it's intrinsically theological because they're saying Muslims everywhere are already part of the caliphate. They either need to emigrate and join the caliphate there in the Islamic State, or they need to commit acts of jihad. And when you look at what they're doing, this marriage of social media and extremism, that, Dr. Brown, is an innovation that is completely unprecedented. It's caught governments, including our Western governments, by surprise. And unlike many churches and other social organizations, the message of the Islamic State is that we have a job for everyone. No one is too old, no one's too weak or marginalized to join the Islamic State. And I think that is fascinating. This message resonates with disconnected youth all over the West. It resonates with young women. We're seeing young women being attracted to the Islamic State. And I want to make this very clear. We're talking about Western young people. These are educated young people born in the 80s and 90s. They have good jobs, and they are joining the Islamic State. So there is a message in there of belonging, joining something greater than yourself. And so there's no confusion. The Islamic State, Dr. Brown, is sending out 90,000 Twitter messages a day. That's why we call our chapter Terrorism is Trending. There are 130,000 social media messages every single day in support of the Islamic State. And so we need to wake up. This is why it's interesting. President Obama recently hired a hafiz. You know what that is, Dr. Brown, someone who has memorized the Quran. They're known as a guardian, to head up our Western propaganda machine to combat this Islamic State propaganda machine. So I think there's many lessons we can learn in the messages and their ideology that point right back to their theology, which is Islamic conquest and domination. The Quran is a book of world domination. It is intrinsically that the entire world should become Islamic. And those are the messages that they're sending out by the thousand every minute of every day.
And, Dr. Brown, let me add something to what Dr. Johnston just said, because he's right on the money. We have in today's youth are disoriented, directionless, without purpose. In the West, we have said forget about God. We've become intentionally secular, intentionally at best agnostic. There's a lot of loud, noisy atheists as well. And what this has done, it has left young people with a sense of purposelessness. And that, and of course, as Christians, we understand why that is. It's a denial of reality. It's a denial of who we really are and the purpose for which we're made and why we're here. And so what's happening is these disenfranchised, disoriented young adults and teenagers are looking for purpose, and this is where the theology of ISIS exhibits itself. It's saying you do have a purpose. There's a theology behind it. You know, there are goals. There's something you can do. You can get connected to God. You can do something extreme. You could guarantee for yourself a future. You can end up in paradise. And that's a very attractive feature. It's evangelism, in a sense.
Yeah, extraordinary. Extraordinary insights. The book, Jesus and the Jihadis.
It
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
He is my defense. I shall not be moved. He is my defense. I shall not be moved.
One thing that ISIS does, radical Islam does, is instills fear in the hearts and minds of its opponents. It's one of its greatest weapons. Those who realize the intensity of the battle, both spiritually and ideologically and even militarily, do well to remember that God is our ultimate defense and the one in whom we put our trust. That was Marty Goetz singing. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is Michael Brown. I'm speaking with New Testament scholars Jeremiah Johnston and Craig Evans about their new book, Jesus and the Jihadis. Dr. Evans, you said something right before the break that I wanted to follow up on. And Dr. Johnston, you had commented on the massive social media work of ISIS, how terrorism is trending, how it's even reaching young people raised in the midst of affluence, how young women, we think the last of all that would go to a group like ISIS, they're being recruited. And Dr. Evans, you talked about the purposelessness of this current generation. I've often said that the way we preach the American gospel today is, this is who I am, this is how I feel, and God is here to please me. Whereas the biblical gospel is, this is who God is, this is how he feels, and we are here to please him. The mindset of the day is the church needs to tone down its rhetoric and basically accept people where they are and just God will somehow be included in their lives. You're saying people are flocking to this radical ideology that says give everything for God and his purpose, and that's actually what people are looking for, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree, because the Islamic State's message is actually, structurally, in a sense, it's much truer to human nature. It's truer to our spiritual dimension as human beings than this watered-down prosperity theology, which is so prevalent in the West today, unfortunately. And so you are right, and that's why people instinctively feel drawn to that. Another way of saying it is like parents who don't want to discipline their children. Children need to be disciplined, and they're just things will go off the rails if there is no discipline. And so it's the same thing. If we're being lied to, if we're being told that God just wants to mollycoddle us and he's Santa Claus and gives us health and wealth and all the rest of that, that's a gross distortion. And I think that's part of it. So the church has lost a lot of its witness. It's lost a lot of its credibility, unfortunately. And with a radically secular society today, the media elites, our politicians, our public schools, and so on, where God is just shoved out of the classroom and right on out of life, it's created this void, this vacuum, and it makes it a lot easier for radical Islamic groups to fill the void. The Islamic State, with its use of social media, is simply doing a brilliant job of it. And we can see now the effectiveness of it. And, of course, it's just appalling. It's tragic.
Yeah, Dr. Brown, you bring up a great point, too. This is Jeremiah, if I could just cut in here.
Please.
I mean, exactly what you're saying. I mean, I've had the privilege with my wife to minister in persecuted lands where Christianity is illegal, mainland China, the West Bank, both Palestinian Christians and Jewish Christians. And this theology of the West, what you're referring to, this me-centric Christianity, that does not resonate in those places. And what's so fascinating, those are places where the church is exploding. I mean, when you look at 2 Corinthians, I mean, I call it the book of Job of the New Testament. When you look at 2 Corinthians and you see all the suffering of Paul throughout the book, it's hard to then hear some of the preaching that we hear that can ad nauseum today in some Western churches that, you know, God's just here to please me. I call it concierge God. And that message certainly is not resonating in persecuted lands for Christians.
So Dr. Evans, what would you tell pastors then in terms of their preaching and teaching? Then I want to go back to Dr. Johnson in terms of the social media battle. But when it comes to something like ISIS and a Christian response, not even to the conflict around the world, but just to our own theology and what we need to speak to our people. What would you tell pastors and Christian leaders?
Oh, boy, that's a tall order, and it's part of a big concern I have with biblical illiteracy. I think that's where you have to get right back to the foundation. The Bible has to become central in the pulpit once again. It has to, preaching has to be expositional once again. People need to hear what the Word of God is and get out of these TED Talks and these motivational messages and these purchased sermons. There's got to be back to the text, back to exposition. People need to hear the Word of God, and it's all watered down and diluted, and the goals are just different. I know I'm on a favorite hobby horse of mine, but I think this is part of it. Prosperity theology, popular talks and messages and feel-good talks, they have shoved aside in the last 30 years rock-solid Bible preaching and exposition. So you have to start there. There's the foundation, and then I think the ship gets righted, begins to get pointed in the correct direction once again.
Yeah, well done in condensing that in foundational matters. It's a hobby horse of mine as well. And again, the Jesus principle, if you save your life, you lose it. If you lose your life for my sake and the gospel, you find it. The more that we try to become like the world, to win the world in terms of morality and spirituality, the more we lose the world and lose our own souls in the process. So, Dr. Johnston, are there any groups in particular that are being targeted by ISIS? And could you also explain why in the world young women would be drawn to them?
Absolutely. That's such a great question, Dr. Brown. It goes back to their messaging. Specifically, they are targeting Western youth. And that's why every parent and every grandparent who listens to Ask Dr. Brown needs to pay attention now, because they are spreading a message that they can join. They're actually telling people, leave your broken family. The West, that is a bankrupt theology. You need to join us. You need to join your real family in the caliphate. And, I mean, we actually have women targeting women through social media, discussing the top 10 reasons why Sharia law is better than Western thought. And I think it's a message that it continues to resonate, as we've already discussed. But how do we combat that, Dr. Brown? I think that's an interesting parallel, because when you really go back to the underpinnings of the Islamic State, which is found in the Quran, we see that it is a message where the marginalized really aren't welcome. We're told not to show compassion. And I think what is so amazing to me, when you see what the Quran actually says about women, I mean, Ayan Hirsi Ali recently said, and we were there recording when she said it, an atheist who has left Islam, that women who are in Islam are already living in hell today because they have no rights. If a woman gets raped, it's her fault. We see that the Quran pulls no punches about it. Women are lesser. They have no rights. And then we see the words of Jesus. When we look at Luke 10, the parable of the Good Samaritan, when we think about Luke 4, that programmatic sermon of Jesus in Nazareth, where he talks about the Spirit of the Lord being upon him to bring good news to the poor, we see that it's an altogether different kind of message, and that is a message of freedom to God, forgiveness. And it's interesting when we contrast that with Islam, of course, that means to be subject, literally to submit, and Muslims, those who have submitted.
Yeah. And friends, this is not some alarmist media that you're hearing from today. These are sober thoughts about realities taking place in the world, in among our youth, and taking place in the West, as radical and different as ISIS does seem. Let's start here, and then we'll continue after the break. Dr. Evans, why then the extreme hostility, not just a land dispute, but an extreme violent hostility in radical Islam and ISIS towards Israel? Dr. Evans, why don't you get us started?
Okay, well, you know, I think it's because it's all about the biblical story. It's all about being faithful and true to what God's will is perceived to be. And so what else can be more important than that? If this is God's will, then you got to do it. And if there's any hope at all for me in paradise, it's doing God's will. I mean, that's a huge motivating factor. So that's why it's extreme. And so if you oppose that, then you're an opponent, and that's what the word Satan means. If you're opposed to the will of God, you're on the side of Satan, and then that means they're going to come after you. That's just all there is to it. There is no turn the other cheek. There is no pray for your enemies, that, as Jesus taught. That's Christianity. That's not Islam. And so it's very black and white. It's very, very cut and dried. And so, again, if you don't know the theology that's motivating ISIS, if you don't understand how that theology is what is driving their ideology, then you're just out to lunch. You don't know what is going on. And that's the problem, I think, for a lot of our Western leaders. They just don't understand what they're dealing with.
Yeah, absolutely. Friends, this book, Jesus and the Jihadis, will really open your eyes to what is going on, and in a practical way at that. You can order the book and the terrific interview with Dr. Evans and Dr. Johnston for just $20 postage paid for the book and the CD of the entire interview. Call now, 1-800-278-9978. This is not available online, only by calling 1-800-278-9978. Just got a few minutes more. I got a ton more questions, but we'll get right to it.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The new book, Jesus and the Jihadis, Confronting the Rage of ISIS. It really is unique among books on ISIS and books on radical Islam. It's authored by Professors Craig Evans and Jeremiah Johnston. It's an exceptional read. It's an easy read. It is extremely informative, and it's practical. I highly recommend it. And if you'd like to order the book and the CD of the one-hour interview with the authors, just call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. All right, Dr. Johnston, what is the end game of ISIS?
Well, the end game of ISIS is what is spelled out in the Quran, Dr. Brown. Muslims believe that there will be no peace in the world until all the world is Islamic. And I think that's interesting. And the next question to ask is the means. Does the Islamic State have the resources to do it? And I want to remind everybody of something that I think is lost on some of us. According to the 9/11 Commission report, and we go into detail about this in our book, Jesus and the Jihadis, the deadliest attack to ever occur on U.S. soil, of course I'm talking about 9/11, only cost $400,000 to $500,000 to carry out. Do you know how much money the Islamic State takes in per day? They take in six times that amount of money per day. I'm talking about $3 million a day. They have a $2 billion war chest. When you look at the financing of the Islamic State, Dr. Brown, I found it fascinating that they received this year over $42 million in donations. Qatar, Saudi Arabia, all over the Middle East, people sending donations. Not to mention, as Craig and I point out, their crimes against humanity. They're not just breaking down all of the artifactual remains of history, which is gross and disgusting and really a crime against the world. They're selling them. And they put out a budget, so we don't need to guess about these things. The Islamic State in the last 12 months has made $100 million selling artifacts on the black market that through third and fourth parties are ending up back in the United Kingdom, back in the United States, and people don't realize they're really funding the Islamic State. So they have the resources to do it. And I want to get back to a very key question that you asked. It's important that we are so clear about this. Why the hate? The hate is fundamental to the Quran. When you look at what the Quran actually says about non-Muslims, we see very clearly why they're doing what they're doing, not just in the land of Israel, not just to the Jews, but to the West. Until all the world is Islamic, there will be no peace.
Yeah, and the idea of Islamic world domination is different than Christian evangelism. People need to understand that Islam does not mean peace, it means submission. So it is bringing the whole world into submission to Allah and Sharia law, and the sword does play an active role in that. Very different than the Christian view of sharing the gospel with people around the world and leading nations into faith in Jesus. Dr. Evans, there's something totally fascinating here having to do with Martin Luther. Where in the world does Martin Luther tie in with ISIS and radical Islam?
Well, Martin Luther in his day, he was very close to the time when Islam, the Islamic forces had conquered and occupied for centuries these parts of Eastern Europe. And so he saw revival again. He saw the possibility of threat. Lots of us in the West don't even realize that. Islamic armies in the 8th century had conquered Spain and were driving into southern France. and were defeated and forced out. And it took a couple of centuries to drive them out. Islamic armies attacked from the east and occupied Hungary, a country I really enjoy visiting, a place where, in fact, I did one of my graduate degrees. They were occupied for 400 years. A lot of people don't realize that. Islam is aggressive. It's expansionist. And so Martin Luther was well aware of that. And so he translated the Quran into German. He wanted people to know what this book says so that Christians could understand Islam better. He saw it in eschatological terms, a great threat. And so it's interesting that, you know, even Martin Luther gets pulled into this discussion.
And yeah, it's interesting, really. Dr. Brown, if you go to Wittenberg today, you can actually see Luther's Quran there, and you can see the preface that he wrote, which is fascinating. And, I mean, you would have thought he wrote it in the 21st century, and it's 500 years ago.
Extraordinary. Extraordinary. Gentlemen, you've written this book with a specific purpose in mind. You're educators, but you're educating in a practical way. What are you hoping will be the response, the impact for the readers?
Well, we need a thinking church. Jude 3 says that we're to contend for the faith. That's that wonderful Greek word, epigenizomai. It means continue to attack. And Dr. Brown, we have far too many Christians who are on the retreat. And I want to tell you this. That's why I thank God for the Ask Dr. Brown radio show. I encourage you, Dr. Brown, to keep doing what you're doing because you model this for the church. You're filling really a gap that exists in the church right now. Craig and I, we're concerned about Christian witness and testimony coming across unthinkingly ignorant, not only of Islam, but of the questions of the day. And we need that thinking faith that can compel people to Christ, that reaches not only their heart, but their head as well.
Mm. Dr. Evans?
Well, you know, I hope, too, for many westernized Muslims who are open to evidence, open to reason, arguments, facts, and so forth, to rethink. I know, of course, many former Muslims who have become Christians, and in some cases, evangelists and apologists are wonderful people. And I always want to make a distinction. Islam is, as a religion, Islam is oppressive. But people who are Muslims are people. God loves them. Christ died for them. The goal of the gospel is their liberation and their freedom. That's what we want. That's the message of the gospel. That's the good news, freedom from sin and the slavery to sin. It's not oppression. It's not slavery. It's not submission to some power. It's not a God who is remote and far away. It's a God, rather, who loves us and became one of us, and that's the incarnation. And so that's a liberating message, and I want the people who currently are Muslims and caught in that to be liberated and to enjoy the good news, too, just like anyone else.
Yeah, well, wonderful, and I trust that this book, Jesus and the Jihadis, will go a long way towards that. Thank you both for joining us. Dr. Johnson, thank you for the kind words as well. It's been a joy to have you on the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Always good to talk with you.
All right, a real joy. All right, friends, there you have it, the book, Jesus and the Jihadis, Confronting the Rage of ISIS, the Theology Driving the Ideology. You can get the book and the CD of this terrific interview with these two scholars, just $20 postage paid. You can only do that right here on the Line of Fire. So call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. If you believe in the work that we're doing, if you do recognize there's a unique void that we are filling and that we are really on the front lines, pray for us and consider helping us with an additional gift. Your one-time gift, your monthly support mean the world to us. You have no idea how your simple financial gift lifts burdens, brings encouragement, and makes a difference in amplifying my voice to reach more and more people with the truth of the word, the truth of the gospel, light exposing darkness. So call now. You can donate online as well at Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. You can call 1-800-278-9978 to order Jesus and the Jihadis and this full one-hour interview. My bottom line today, the power of radical Islam is that it is spiritually driven. The weakness of radical Islam is the power is not from above, but from below. The spiral of violence continues to rise in Israel. Whose fault is it?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Boy, what a great hour we just had with two New Testament scholars, Craig Evans and Jeremiah Johnston, talking about their new book, Jesus and the Jihadis. If you missed the hour, we'd like to get the book and the interview. I'll tell you how you can do it a little later in the broadcast. This is Michael Brown. It's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Because I had these two scholars on and had a great interview with them, their content, their insights, so wonderful, so clear, I didn't take any calls, didn't even open the phone line. So if you'd like to call with a Jewish-related question, it can relate to the conflict in the Middle East today, it can relate to the Hebrew language, it can relate to Jewish tradition, it can relate to Jewish background of the New Testament or Messianic prophecy or Jewish objections to Jesus, even questions on Islam, although I can answer many, but certainly not all. I'm not an Islamic scholar. We'll do our best to help and answer you today, but it's got to be Jewish-related because it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Joey, grab clip starting at number 8. This is Corey Gilschuster in Israel. He's talking to Palestinians in Hebron. And he's asking, is stabbing soldiers and civilians heroic? I want you to hear some of these responses. We'll start with clip number 8.
What's his opinion about the people who stab and run over soldiers?
Yeah, are they heroes?
Halim Abdal Birayak? Yes, of course they're heroes.
And if they kill someone who's a civilian or a settler, is it also good?
Yes, because in the end, of course he is a hero, because in the end he is killing people who have taken away his land.
Ah, all right, well, that leads to some follow-up questions. We'll grab clip number 9, some follow-up questions. Again, Corey Gilschuster asking Palestinians in Hebron, is stabbing soldiers and civilians heroic? I mean, how do you know who's who? These responses are really eye-opening.
The people who die for their lands are heroes for us because they are defense of their children, and the soldiers themselves are the most terrorists in our lands.
How do you know that the soldier that you stab is the same one who did something to you? How do you know?
Because he took my lands here.
What, so because he's Jewish?
Yeah, not because we, as Muslims, are in no conflict with the Jewish of themselves. We are in conflict with the terrorists, okay?
How do you know who's a terrorist and who's not a terrorist?
Because he came to our lands to confiscate my wealth and to take my lands.
But how do you know he did it? If I live in Tel Aviv or in Haifa, and I'm Israeli and a Jew or a Zionist, and I didn't take anything from anybody, why should I be killed?
Because you came to my land. When one is an Israeli, he can find his roots. He is not from this land. So he knows that very, very well that he is not from Palestine, that he deserves to be killed in our land.
He knows because, that?
Yes.
Okay.
He deserves that.
Mm-hmm.
I think...
So any Israeli?
An Israeli, yes.
Any Israeli,
yes.
Okay.
Mind-boggling, isn't that, friends? But there are hundreds of thousands, millions that believe that very thing. And of course, the hatred then does expand to Jews worldwide. You cannot deny that. It does expand. But this is the mindset. The Israelis, the Jews are guilty. Stabbing them, killing them is a good thing, a meritorious thing. Everyone should do it. We've got some shocking footage. When we come back, stay here.
Here our cry, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The scene from Gaza is chilling. It's not just a crowd chanting and wanting to kill Jews. You've got a guy sitting on the shoulders of another man brandishing these massive knives, and there is a call to butcher and kill Jewish people. You have to understand there is systematic incitement. There is systematic stirring up of hatred against the Israelis, hatred against the Jews, and the results are disastrous. The results are ugly, and it starts all the way down with little children, and it comes on a regular basis from Muslim leaders. Listen to what this Muslim leader has to say. We'll give you the translation as well. Listen to what he has to say. He's a Muslim leader on the national television show for Gaza on Al-Aqsa TV. Listen to what he has to say.
مش أنا بقسمه عن حالي هذا بقسمه عن الشعب الفلسطيني كله وعن الأمة العربية والإسلامية كلها وعن أمتنا اللي بتمتد من الشرق إلى الغرب.
All right, he is calling for Quran. He wants someone to bring him a Quran so he can swear on it that we will not leave one Jew alive. We will not leave a single Jew dead or alive on our land. What happens to those hearing that day and night? What happens to those going to the mosque hearing that day and night? They're not hearing, how can we peacefully coexist? How can we all live together in harmony? What can we do to bring down the walls of hostility? What can we do to work with Israel to see prosperity for our nation, for our people, education for our children? No, the Jews. And notice they don't say Israelis. The Jews. We will not leave a single Jew dead or alive on our land. This is being said day and night and day and night and day and night. If you go over to Iran, for example, there is similar rhetoric and people are hearing it. Here is David Badaim. He is the head of the Center for Near East Policy Research. He's on Arutz Sheva TV September 17th, and he's giving us a picture of what is happening in the radical Islamic world.
This is not a matter only of incitement. This is a matter of a systematic education for children to learn how to use weapons to murder Jews. We have to understand that a great mistake was made to emphasize the nuclear capability of Iran. The nuclear capability is one thing which most people can't understand, not in Israel, not abroad. What people can understand is what it means to put thousands of guns in the hands of children and to train them systematically to murder Jews. Look at the faces of the young people and of the children that we have interviewed in our film, Iran, Billions for Terror, and understand that that could be the near future if the Iranians receive $50 or $150 billion in their hands and they can do with it what they want.
Look, you know what happens when you demonize a particular group, when you say they're less than human. And in Quranic theology, the Jews are the sons of apes and pigs. And instead of having a proper historical narrative and understanding what has happened when there is plenty of room for Jews and Arabs living in the land side by side, no, this is Muslim land. No, no Jew can be on it. The Jews are evil occupiers and they must be exterminated, wiped out, obliterated from the land. And anyone who kills a Jew is doing God a service and is guaranteed a place in the world to come. You say, well, what kind of impact does it have? It's not just terrorists as young as 13 years old attacking Israeli citizens or attacking a 13-year-old Israeli boy and trying to kill him. It's not just that. It goes down to the little children. Here's a voice. Is there anything more tender, more sweet than the voice of a sweet, adorable little girl? Listen to these tender, tender sounds, but the words are horrific.
عشان بدي أطعن اليهودي.
ليش بدك تطعن اليهودي؟
لأنهم سرقوا أرضنا.
سرقوا أرضنا بدك تطعنيهم بإيش؟
بالسكين.
يا قوية أنت إن شاء الله يا بابا.
Yeah, inshallah, God willing. Here's a little girl, a sweet, adorable looking little girl, Palestinian, Jordanian. By the way, living in a Palestinian refugee camp in Jordan. Why are there Palestinian refugee camps in Jordan? Why are there Palestinian refugee camps in the Muslim world? How come the Palestinians haven't been settled in fully as equal citizens with equal rights? Because they are kept in an oppressed state as a constant harassment against Israel, a constant incitement against Israel, rather than being incorporated as other refugees would be within the new homeland. No, they are still living in refugee camps, and this is a constant sore, a constant blight against Israel. But here's a little girl holding a knife saying, I want to stab a Jew. I mean, this is mind-boggling stuff. This is what little children are being taught. Yes, they are victims as well. Okay, I agree that if a 13-year-old kid picks up a knife to stab an innocent person, a civilian, that person is responsible for his or her actions. I agree. A 15-year-old suicide bomber tries to blow himself or herself up to kill innocent men, women, and children. Yes, they are responsible. But let's face the fact they are also victims of a horrific ideology that they have been hearing since they were little children. And then this is highlighted. This is praised. Again, we'll go to Al-Aqsa TV. Here's a little boy, he and his little brother, dressed in military fatigues, and they're appearing on state-run TV in Gaza because the boy is a poet. So listen to him reciting poetry.
يا قدس افتيكي بدمي وبروحي بروحي وبدمي سأحررك من عيد اليهود بعيد القسام أكيد أبشر أسرانا أن الفرج قريب.
When you hear Al-Quds, the holy city, the holy place, that's speaking of Jerusalem. He wants to liberate Jerusalem, and as he expresses later in the interview, he wants to do it by being a member of the Al-Aqsa Brigade. He wants to be a terrorist. He wants to be part of the military wing of Hamas, and he wants to kill Jews and liberate Jerusalem. And he's written a poem, and he's so good at poetry for being a little boy that he's brought on state-run TV. And he's got a little brother there. And the brother is asked what he wants to do. The one kid wants to grow up and be part of the military wing of Hamas. What about his brother? Oh, thankfully, he has different aspirations. No, not thankfully. Listen. He wants to be an engineer. Not like his brother who wants to join the military wing of Al-Aqsa. He wants to be an engineer. Why? So he can blow up the Jews. So he can blow up the Jews. These are little children. They're getting this radical, hate-filled ideology. And here's what you have to understand. Some of the terrorists in recent years have come from good homes. Some of them, you go to their Facebook page and they seem to be prosperous and everything going well and they're popular, but they have this intense hatred against the so-called evil occupiers and they've got to kill them and wipe them out. Friends, it is so clear that this is what is driving so much of the violence against the people of Israel. This violent theology, this violent ideology, it is murderous, it is ugly, and it is especially murderous and ugly when it influences and infiltrates the minds and hearts of little impressionable children that could have just as well grown up to be part of some type of Peace Corps or reconciliation group working together with Israel. And look, there are Muslims and there are Israelis who are working together. There are Arabs and Israelis who are working together, Muslims and Jews. And I have friends, Messianic Jews, Jewish believers in Jesus in the land, Christian friends in the land who are actively working with Arab brothers and sisters for the purposes of reconciliation. I know of meetings taking place like this. I know of young people's meetings taking place like this. It's happening on a secular level as well. People do want to get past the hatred. But friends, with an ideology like this permeating so many of the people, it is impossible to overcome without changing that first. And let me go a little further. This is impacting people in the West as well. I'm not going to get into all the stories now. I've got a stack of them. But a girl in Denmark, 15 years old, she and her boyfriend are watching videos by ISIS. After that, she goes and stabs her mother to death. There's a guy in California who's just been arrested. He was going to bomb some, quote, Zionist church. This ideology is having an impact even in the West, and the ideology is murderous. Let us expose it. And whatever your view is in the Middle East conflict, if you don't fully share my view of what the scriptures say about Israel and the Jewish people, you should at least renounce this hateful, murderous ideology that is being fed to little children. You should oppose it. And if you're a Muslim, you should speak out against it. Let us get the truth out and liberate the minds of these impressionable little children.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. I've just been handed a message that I need to pass on. It is to someone whose initials are ADB. Yeah, it's a special message for, it's for a man, okay. It's for a young man. It's for a boy. Oh, red hair and freckles? Oh, and plays baseball very well? Oh. Oh, and his first name is Andrew? Happy birthday, buddy. Happy 12th birthday to my red-haired grandson, Andrew. We are super proud of you. Grandma and Grandpa are super proud of you. You are a fine young man, becoming a fine young man of God, and now officially today, a preteen. Happy birthday, buddy. And from the tens of billions listening, they all say happy birthday, Andrew, as well. Hey, I get to do this because it's my show. We've only got four grandkids, so that means four times a year of other family birthdays and things like that. But I get to do it because it's live talk radio. All the more, though, does it underscore how important it is to get the truth into the hearts of kids, to get them thinking in godly ways, to get them thinking in life-giving ways, to get them thinking in ways of truth that will liberate, that will help, that will set free rather than that will bind and hurt. If you've got a Jewish-related question, 866-34-TRUTH, I really wish some of you who blast my theology online, who accuse me of being on the Zionist payroll, who think I don't understand the gospel because I believe there's still a place for Israel, and you blast me in the nastiest, most profane, ugly, vile terms, I wish you'd have the courage to call. Oh, of course, you can use profanity and stuff, but some of you don't use profanity. You just have violent differences with my theology. Some of you are professing Christians and express real, real strong differences with my theology. I just find it disappointing that you can blast away on social media but won't even pick up the phone to call ever and express your differences where we could look at the scriptures together and see what the Bible really does say. 866-34-TRUTH. That's one reason we do live talk radio, to hear from those who differ with us. So again, though, any Jewish-related question, I will be taking some phone calls. 866-34-TRUTH. So here is the perspective. This is standard talking point, October 16th, and Jerry Greb's clips 12 and 13. October 16th, BBC's Lise, or Lise Doucette, conducted an interview with the PLO Executive Committee member, Hanan Ashrawi. And she lays out the standard radical Islamic, radical Palestinian, anti-Israel talking points as if they are factual. And she does it in a way that if you don't know the rest of the story, you might actually believe it. We'll start with clip number 12.
And Anna Shrawi, first of all, we heard from Mickey Rosenfeld mentioning the social media, which the Israelis showed us last night, images of calling for attacks on Israeli sites, even a video showing how to stab an Israeli. Is this something that you would condemn, that you can't have these sorts of urging to violence?
Excuse me, Liz. First of all, you're starting from the end. I think the whole context of the situation is a very abnormal, cruel, and lethal military occupation that has held the Palestinian people captive for decades and that acts with full impunity and with enormous violence and cruelty. That's the context. Then let's talk about all the other manifestations of this absolutely abnormal situation. Israel has been unaccountable, has been using unbridled violence, has been killing Palestinians with impunity, has been stealing land, building settlements, destroying, demolishing homes, and imprisoning thousands of Palestinians without due process. So now you're asking
me
about...
So this is how you see the stabbings of Israelis? This is how you see the stabbings?
The stabbings of Israelis did not... Of course, I've seen what's happening. And I'm telling you that when Israel uses violence, it unleashes unbridled military violence against the Palestinian people, of course it provokes the Palestinians beyond endurance.
Yeah. Sickening. Sickening comments. Here's where you start. You start with this. The stabbings are wrong. The stabbings of Israeli men, women, and children are wrong. I renounce them. But let me give you background. And of course, the background that she presents is biased, misleading, exaggerated, untrue. But start there. Start by renouncing. Start by saying this is wrong. No. She won't even say that. Why? Because in her mind, it's somehow justifiable because of the evil, evil Israelis. And I'm going to respond to the specific claims that she makes in terms of falsehood. Go to clip number 13, though, next. Let's just hear a little bit more from Hanan Ashrawi.
It's been using live ammunition, demolishing homes, and the latest escalation is that they changed the status quo of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, of Al-Haram al-Sharif, and again, they have blocked off Jerusalem for all Palestinians. No Palestinian West Banker or from exile or from Gaza can get to Jerusalem, and they have managed to provoke every single Palestinian, Muslim, Christian, or otherwise, by carrying out such draconian measures.
Nonsense, nonsense, nonsense. Here's the provocation. Israel did not change the status of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Israel did not just invade the mosque. What happened was that there were Palestinians who were bringing bombs, who were bringing rocks, who were bringing other things, other incendiary devices, other weapons into the mosque. And they were also stopping Christians and Jews from doing what they were legally allowed to do, what is completely permitted to do. And Israel had to step in to stop that, because of which the Muslim world now spreads rumors that Israel is going to do this with the mosque and that with the mosque, start attacking, start killing. And that's what provoked it. That's what provoked it. And look, the fact of the matter is, where Israel is allowed to work together with Palestinians in the so-called occupied territories, there is prosperity for the Palestinians. They get better jobs, they get better wages, their lifestyle increases. If the Palestinians said, okay, we really don't want to kill you anymore, and proved it out, there would be no security barrier. There would be no security wall at any point. It wouldn't be needed. Nobody likes it being there. There wouldn't be all the restrictions, there wouldn't be all the checkpoints, and there would be a liberation of the lifestyle of the Palestinians. What's the problem? It is the Palestinian ideology. No, Israel's not guiltless, but Israel is not the guilty, evil occupier. There are plenty of ways, and there still are ways, if there was not the hostility towards the Jewish people and not the desire to exterminate them from the land, there would be ways to live together in peace. That's a fact. That's what Israel would love to see. All right, friends, the book Jesus and the Jihadis, an eye-opening practical book written by two top New Testament scholars. You can get the book about the ideology of ISIS, why terrorism is trending, what is a Jesus response to these things, the Quran and the Bible. Great practical eye-opening book. You can get the book and the interview I just did with Craig Evans and Jeremiah Johnson, just $20 postage paid. Call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I have a very special, a previously unscheduled guest has just joined me in the studio. He is Middle East expert, biblical scholar, theologian. No, he's my grandson, Andrew. Hey, happy birthday, Andrew.
Thank you.
How old, buddy?
12.
12 years old. Pretty impressive. Did you get that red hair, those freckles from me?
My grandma and my mom.
Look at that. All right, listen. I know you've got a lot to do. It's your birthday. There's a lot going on. I won't keep you long. But if you could have anything in the entire world, I mean anything, buddy, yeah. Anything in the entire world, like just you dream it and it would happen. You just think about it and it would happen. Anything whatsoever that you could dream of, ask for, anything, like as crazy big as you want it, what would you like for your birthday?
Your Volume 5 series.
Oh, Volume 5. That's it, man. You just made my day. Volume 5 of answering Jewish objections to Jesus, because each year I give you a new volume, right, starting at what, 8, 9, 10, 11. So now it's time for Volume 5, and we'll study that together. That would be like the ideal birthday present, right?
Yeah.
All right, if you believe that, then you believe a little bit too much about my family. But tell you what, next week, I know you got a ball game tonight. Next week, God willing, when I'm home, we will go for I'll eat healthy, you can eat junk, and then we'll go see a good G-rated movie together, right? Sound like a deal?
Yep.
All right, let's, everybody together, happy birthday, Andrew. There you go. Have an awesome day, buddy. I appreciate you stopping by our office.
Thank you.
All right, well, let's figure out a hand to shake here. There we go. All right, there you go. Okay, well, look, maybe one day, Middle East scholar, maybe one day biblical scholar, theologian, radio host, TV host, you never know. All right, hey, thanks for letting me have a little fun here. And we plan to surprise him with a special video. We video recorded that, and he's got no idea what's coming. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Durham, North Carolina. Brent, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. Thank you for taking my call, man.
You're very welcome.
Listen, I just wanted to call in a little support for you guys. Love your show, man. And you're just standing strong, you know. And I can hear the love in your voice for your grandchildren. You know, that's great. I got some grandchildren. There's nothing like it, you know.
That's true. That's true.
Yes, sir. I guess that's your heir apparent, huh, Andrew?
Yeah. Well, it could well be. We've got Andrew. We've got his younger cousin, Connor, who's about 6 weeks younger. His older sister, Eliana, and then their younger cousin, Riley. So you never know who's going to step in and perhaps even get some of our sons-in-law involved, maybe not even skip the generation. But, Brent, thank you for the kind words. And, you know, listen, we get attacked in the ugliest ways day and night. But I was speaking to a young man about it yesterday. I said, that's a sign that we're doing the right thing. That's a sign that we're on the front lines. Someone said if you weren't right over the target, you wouldn't get attacked like that. But we know that for every attack and every unkind word, there are 10 or 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 who are being blessed and helped and equipped and strengthened. So it's our joy to be on the front lines. And I do appreciate the kind words, Brent.
Yes, sir. We're praying always for you guys.
Thank you. Prayer support means the world to us. In fact, friends, and thank you for the call. I appreciate that you took the time to call in to share that. Before I go to a few more phone calls and begin to answer some of your questions on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, we'll do that. In fact, I've just got a few seconds before the break. As soon as we come back, we will go straight to the phones and take your calls. But one thing I wanted to say is this. Your prayers make a difference. And we have these seasons where we come under just extreme pressure. The spiritual attack increases. The financial pressure increases. And your prayers make such a big difference. And then if you're able to act, support, help us in other ways, it makes a massive difference. So can I just ask you, as we're one of those intense seasons right now, to believe God with us in prayer for everything he's called us to do, to further push it forward, to amplify the voice that he's given me that would allow us to touch more and more people, and that every need would be met. He knows the needs. Would you join us in prayer? It would really make a difference. We'll be right back with your calls.
want, for fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. Let me go straight to the phones. We'll start in Raleigh, North Carolina. Michael, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
Doing very well, thank you.
Great. I just found this radio station yesterday, and I was amazed by a lot of the different speakers that I've been listening to over the last day. And it was just amazing on my way home today that you were talking about Jewish Thursday or Israeli Thursday.
Yeah, Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, every Thursday, sir.
Well, I have a friend that... is Jewish, and she is dating a Christian, and they have come to an impasse. They don't discuss whether Jesus is the Messiah anymore. They just stop. And I've been wondering about, I want to, you know, she's a friend, and I want to share with her in love a way to convince her that Jesus is the Messiah.
Sure. Yeah, I'm a Jewish believer in Jesus myself, Michael, and have been interacting with rabbis in the Jewish community now for over 40 years since I came to faith in 71 at the age of 16. And on the one hand, Jews are like everybody else. They're people created by God that fall short, that need his mercy. They sin, they need a savior. And in that sense, it's the same message. However, there are many obstacles that stop Jewish people from believing in Jesus. For example, the history of the church, there's often been persecution of Jews in Jesus' name, and that has driven many Jews away from the gospel. There are conceptions, well, Jews believe in three gods, Christians believe in three gods, not one God, or we don't believe in a crucified Messiah, or we don't need blood atonement. So I've written multiple volumes addressing those issues, but here's what I'd like to suggest, all right? And as a new listener, welcome to the station here, the Truth Radio. I want to suggest something to you. I wrote a book called The Real Kosher Jesus. In the book, I interact with an Orthodox Jewish rabbi who denies that Jesus is the Messiah. We've done debates many times. I wonder if I sent you that book as a gift, if you could give it to both of them and ask if they might take a read through it. You can read it first. It'll give you understanding of some of the Jewish issues with Jesus and things like that. And then maybe she'd be willing to read it. I've also done debates, and perhaps they might be willing to watch a debate together. Do you think if you said, hey, here's an Orthodox rabbi debating a Jewish believer in Jesus, do you think that they might be willing to watch it together? Think that's a possibility?
You know, everything's possible.
All right, so tell you what I'm going to do. Stay right there, Michael. As soon as Betsy gets a break, she will get back over to you, and you'll give her your name and address. I want to send you as my gift my book, The Real Kosher Jesus, and also a debate that I did with Rabbi Shmuley. Did the Jews kill Jesus? Or excuse me, it's called Who Really Killed Jesus? That's the debate. It's a famous debate we did, standing room only, the Hilton Hotel in New York City. Who really killed Jesus? So we'll send you that DVD. And then if they're willing to watch it, then there'll be an interest to read my book, The Real Kosher Jesus. At the very worst, they are a gift to you to help inform you and equip you to understand some of the issues and how to reach Jewish people with the good news of Jesus. But perhaps the Lord will use us to reach this woman. So, bet you get your address. I'll send you the book, The Real Kosher Jesus, and the debate, Who Really Killed Jesus. And pray above all that the Holy Spirit would bring this woman under conviction of sin, that she would recognize her need for a Savior. Let's go to Lebanon, Connecticut. Welcome to The Line of Fire. Alan, thanks for joining us.
Okay, Dr. Brown, I want to first say thank you for your service to the body of Messiah and
well, they don't really know it, to Israel as well. Well, I was in my life group class for my Assemblies of God Church here in Colchester, Connecticut, and we were talking about the Day of the Lord. And one of the passages was brought up, Zechariah 13, verses 8 through 9. So I asked my teacher, which unfortunately this is a Jewish thing, is there going to be another Holocaust? And he didn't know. I've had some Christians say it does mean that, but as far as I know what it means, if you take it in context from verse 7 through 8 and 9, it means in the wake of our Lord being crucified, Titus and the Roman legion fulfilled Zechariah 13, verses 8 and 9. Is that right?
Yeah, that is certainly a very viable reading of the text. Here's what we have. In Zechariah 12, we have an end-time vision about the attack on Jerusalem at the end of the age and how God will deliver his people that turn to him in repentance. And then Zechariah 14 picks that up again. God will gather all the nations against Jerusalem to battle. The city shall be taken. The houses plundered. Half the city will go into exile. The rest of the people will not be cut off from the city. Then the Lord will go out and fight against those nations. So this is the return of Yeshua, Jesus, the Messiah, who will then defeat the enemies of Israel and deliver the Jewish people. So the question is, chapter 13, where does that fit? And you are right in pointing to verse 7, "Awake, O sword, against my shepherd, against the man who stands next to me, declares the Lord of hosts. Strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered. I will turn my hand against the little ones." And then, "In the whole land, declares the Lord, two-thirds shall be cut off and perish, and one-third shall be left alive. And I'll put this third into the fire and refine them as one refines silver and test them as gold is tested. They will call upon my name, and I'll answer them. I'll say, they are my people, and they will say, the Lord is my God." You can make an excellent case, Alan, for just what you said, that this refers to the smiting of Jesus, the scattering of his disciples, and then the repercussions of what happened with the rejection of the Messiah through the land, the disastrous results of the war against Rome in 66 to 70 that culminated with the destruction of the temple, and then two generations later, the Bar Kokhba War, another rebellion that ends up with Jewish people banished from Jerusalem in terrible suffering. So it could be speaking of that whole 100-year period. It could be speaking of the first battle, in particular with the destruction of the temple, and Jesus prophesied that happening. So, yes, there are verses that seem to speak of end-time attack and calamity on Israel, but that's in the context of the whole world being shaken. The great theme of those is that God will deliver Israel through it. So it's a point well taken. Why are we praying for all the Jews to come back to the land to be slaughtered there? What kind of prayer is that? What kind of theology is that? When I debated Dr. Gary DeMar, he raised that point as well, and I said that I was not completely settled in my view of Zechariah 13. But contextually, following on the heels of verse 7, it makes excellent sense to say this is speaking of something that happened over 1,900 years ago, not something that is still going to happen.
Well, that's good to know. I say many of our relatives were killed in the Holocaust in Poland and Russia, and I've done Holocaust studies, and if this has already been fulfilled, I'll say Baruch HaKadoshim, bless their holy name. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Brown. Appreciate it.
All right. I appreciate that, Alan. Thank you. Listen, we're not trying to build a theology on our wishful thinking or anything like that, but we're trying to build a theology on the truth of Scripture, and you can make an excellent argument, as Alan just did, in terms of the context. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go back to Durham. Stephen, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Dr. Brown, I am so grateful to God for the platform that he's giving you. I listen to you quite often, and I've been pressed all week to whether I'm a first-time caller, whether or not I would give you a call. I seek no popularity of any kind, but I feel compelled to say that, you know, the last brother that spoke, he said everything is possible. And with kindness, I disagree, because I believe with all that I am, it is an impossibility to claim to be a follower of Christ and not love the Jews, the Jewish people, not love and pray for them. And I believe that there will never be another Holocaust, because I stand with Bibi, and I see him as a strong leader, and I'm grateful that he understands that he's a warrior, and he won't lay down, and he will stand up, and I believe the majority of my Jewish brothers and sisters will stand with him and fight. I just see it's so clear to me that the Jewish nation is the strongest nation ever, past, present, future. And I pray for my brothers and sisters.
Yeah, Stephen, yeah, let me just jump in. First, thank you for the kind words, and thank you for your great heart for Israel. And ultimately, yeah, Netanyahu is a very strong leader. The Israeli military is strong, but the greatest trust is in God to protect the nation of Israel.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, let's go right back to the phones on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. By the way, if you are in the Linwood, Washington area, I don't think it's too far out of Seattle, please join me this weekend. I'm scheduled to speak Friday night, twice during the day Saturday, on the theme of Can You Begin Christian during the day with Q&A, then meet privately with pastors in the afternoon, then a meeting Saturday night, and both Sunday morning services. For more info, go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on itinerary to find out exactly where I will be. Let's go to Winston-Salem. All right. But hey, Johnny, thanks for calling in to express your appreciation for Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Sorry we couldn't get to you. We'll go to Chapel Hill. Robin, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. This is Robin.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Great. It's awesome to be on the show with you. I had a question about prophecy. I've been studying prophecy and trying to line it up with current events and trying to understand where maybe America is in prophecy and where we are, and I understand there are verses about Israel being born in a day, a nation being born in a day. And then I thought, what about the Holocaust? Is there any hint of it in prophecy?
Well, here's the answer. Yes and no. There is not a direct prophecy about the Holocaust, direct prophecies that there would be the slaughter of 2 out of 3 Jews in Europe in the 20th century. That is not prophesied directly. Two things are prophesied. One is in Jeremiah, the 30th chapter, there's a prophecy concerning Jacob's trouble. Now, in context, it's pointing to the destruction of Jerusalem and the exiling of the Jewish people that took place in Jeremiah's day. And that is the first application of it. But when I wrote my commentary on Jeremiah and really dug deeper, it seemed to me that this was also a template for repeated onslaughts against the Jewish people and repeated periods of suffering in the future and perhaps future still. So there is not a direct prophecy of the Holocaust on the one hand, but there are passages like Jeremiah 30 that, although speaking first and foremost for the prophet's own day, in this case over 2,500 years ago, often have another dimension to them and are also pointing to the future. Now, some would argue that in the curses for disobedience in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, that there are prophecies of the Holocaust, meaning that Jewish people would be scattered around the world and would suffer absolutely horrific things because of disobedience against God. And then some of the ultra-Orthodox rabbis in the days of the Holocaust would have said that these terrible things are happening to the Jewish community because Jews have apostatized, because the Jews have become liberal and secular and worldly. The birth of Reform Judaism was looked at in the harshest of terms as a denial of Torah and a denial of the God of Israel by the Jewish leaders of the day. And some said, look, our stores are being shut down, but we didn't shut down on the Sabbath. And this is why these things are happening to us. But very few would hold to that today to say that the curses in the Torah or a prophecy of the Holocaust. That would only be a very extreme view that would hold to it. And then the question would be, why at that period of history and why in that location? So to me, there are many other dimensions that play into it, and there's certainly a satanic desire to destroy the Jewish people. If the Holocaust was purely a divine judgment, then why immediately after it, without there being wide-scale national Jewish repentance and turning to God and observance of Torah, why immediately after that is the modern state of Israel birthed? So there are many mysteries as to why the Holocaust took place, things only God knows. I've often quoted a rabbi friend of mine who said this to me over 40 years ago. He said, Mike, I can't explain the Holocaust with God. In other words, the suffering, the horrors without God intervening. He said, I can't explain the Holocaust without God. With God. He said, but I can't explain the Holocaust without God. That the events seem to have been orchestrated on some level where God is involved. It's clear to me that the devil wants to exterminate and wipe out the Jewish people. It's clear to me that however horrible the suffering, God ultimately delivered the Jewish people and that they were not totally wiped out, or people were not, and a new homeland was birthed, or the ancient homeland was rebirthed. But beyond that, I don't see specific scripture speaking to it, and I think we have to be very careful if we start making applications.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for answering that.
You are very welcome, and thank you for listening. All right, friends, we are almost out of time, but let me just see here. I got a bunch more clips I didn't get to. In South Africa, Khaled Mashal had this to say at a Cape Town rally organized by the African National Congress. He is the leader of Hamas, the political chief of Hamas. And he wanted to paint a picture that Hamas's struggle with the Israelis is similar to the apartheid struggle. South Africa, you have achieved your freedom. The people of Palestine are aspiring to attain their freedom. You know what they need? They need freedom from Hamas. They need freedom from radical Islam. That's the freedom they need. He said, do not expect that they should stop with the uprising. Do not expect that they should stop with the resistance. And he made plain that they are going to go on with their attacks and inciting attacks. The foreign ministry in Jerusalem has expressed shock and outrage at South Africa's hosting of the terror group's leaders, and on Monday summoned South Africa's deputy ambassador for a reprimand. The ANC's invitation to Hamas provided a tailwind for terrorism and blatantly and crudely ignored the position of the international community, which considers Hamas a terror organization. Mashal said, we are insisting with our people to finish this apartheid regime. This racist occupation should be put to an end. So how will that happen? By wiping out the Jews or driving them out of the land. That's Hamas theology and ideology. Period. Wipe them out or get them out of the land. That's how there's peace. Not millions of Jews living side by side with millions of Arabs in peaceful coexistence. Nope. Not there. So don't fool yourself. The ideology of Hamas remains radical, remains deadly, remains destructive. Pray that the Palestinians living in Gaza would be delivered from Hamas and would be given rulers that would care for them and put them first rather than try to exterminate Israel. And friends, if you did not hear about the very special offer in the first hour, a really excellent, eye-opening, practical, readable new book, Jesus and the Jihadis, hot off the press, two professors, New Testament scholars, Craig Evans and Jeremiah Johnston. We had a great one-hour interview together. Boy, I could have spoken to these gentlemen for hours and hours. What great insight information they gave us. You can get the CD of the interview and the book only from us now, this package. Postage paid, just $20. If you can help with an additional donation, that would be great. But take advantage of this 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Remember to check out our other resources, free resources, resources offered at AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line today, the great deliverance that the Palestinians need is not from an oppressive Israel, but from an oppressive religion.